Hello, friends. We're going to go on now. I decided to not to do Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 112, but to change it to 113. It's a little easier to convert to usable format when there's not too many programs in one run. So we're at 113, and we've been talking about the greater cycles, the transition from Pisces into Aquarius with an overlap of some 10, some 500 years, the transition in the greater age of Pisces and Aquarius, a transition of 5,000 years, and though it seems to be hinted in a way that the transition period in a 250,000 year cycle is also 5,000 years, I think that we have to be cautious about this, because if we keep the analogy going, the transition period for such a great cycle would be more like 50,000 years, always one-fifth of what the entire cycle may be. The entire cycle of a normal precessional age is given by decay as 2,500 years, although mathematically it is closer to 2,160. The transitional cycle, the larger cycle for the Platonic year, one gyration of the Earth's axis, is given as 25,000 years, but more accurate calculations based upon the number 2,160 are 25,920 years. And we have a 250,000 year cycle, which may be derived approximately by subtracting some 60,000 years from a 300,000 year cycle, which would give 240,000 years. In any case, I'm wondering, and this is a matter for future determination, whether the overlap period in that much greater cycle is not perhaps 50,000 years rather than 5,000. We're told here that the great sweep of the sun around the greater zodiac, and we're not told what that greater zodiac is, a period of 250,000 years, or a complete round, that's one of the ways in which the word round is used, came to an end when the sun entered Pisces over 2,000 years ago. Now, it entered Pisces in a lesser precessional cycle. It didn't enter Pisces in a great precessional cycle, because that would be 25,000 years. So 2,000 years ago, our lesser age of Pisces began. This process of now the question is there a gap between this first sentence and the second? This process of passing out of or entering into a particular sign and cyclic influence covers a period of 5,000 years where this greater round or cycle is concerned. Now, as I said before, this greater round or cycle may refer precisely to the 250,000 year cycle, or it may refer to a cycle of 25,000 years. Oops, okay. So the relationship between these two sentences, the great sweep of the sun around the greater zodiac, a period of 250,000 years, or a complete round, came to an end when the sun entered Pisces over 2,000 years ago. Now, the entering of Pisces is a small precessional cycle. Then, does the second sentence begin to take up another subject? This process of passing out of or entering into a particular sign and cyclic influence covers a period of 5,000 years where this greater round or cycle is concerned. Now, later, what we see, see if I can go to this, 25,000 years, for those which are connected with a complete zodiacal round. Notice how the idea of a complete zodiacal round is referred to 25,000 years. See if there's anything else here along that line. The greater cycle is here. From certain astrological angles, a similar process of decentralization must take place, and the solar system must no longer be regarded as a point around which the zodiac revolves or through which the sun passes in its great cycle of approximately 25,000 years. So there is a great zodiacal round here, definitely. And let's see. Pisces is seen as the head of the list of zodiacal signs because it is governing the present great zodiacal world cycle of 25,000 years. We do not know whether the 250,000-year cycle is actually to be considered a zodiacal cycle. Possibly, but we have to leave that for further clarification. Yes. So it is possible, or it has seemed, that the 5,000-year cycle would correspond well to the 500-year cycle. As 500 is to 2,500, so 5,000 would be to 25,000, so 50,000 would be to 250,000. But there's no use to continually bring these figures forward. This has to be decided at a time when more information is available to us. Okay. Now, we are beginning here in Esoteric Astrology 113, or at least we began 113, but with a little review. These are all points about the 500 years, the 5,000 years, the 2,500 years, the 25,000 years, and the 250,000 years, which astrologers would do well to consider. I would remind students again that when speaking of signs, I am referring to the influences of the constellations as they are represented by the signs. So we have constellations as galaxies of stars, as he talked about it, and signs as concentrated influences. Let's see. I think here, Esoteric Astrology, it might be on page 611 or so. Well, maybe not. I will try to find galaxies of stars. Okay. Yes. Here it is. We have the distinction between constellations as galaxies of stars and signs as concentrated influences. This has been a hypothesis we have been working with. The real energy, the archetypal energy, the prototypal energy, is coming from the constellation. And these influences are gathered in the sign, which is made of Devic substance, which is resonant to the original influence of the constellation. So I would remind students again that when speaking of signs, I am referring to the influences of the constellations as they are represented by the signs. It doesn't mean that this is simply an empty representation. The sign does actually carry energy. But it is the kind of energy which has been dramatically stepped down for the use of the kinds of lives which we find on our planet. Constellational energies, pure and simple, would be far too potent unless they were transformed. Calling to your attention that in the great evolutionary process and owing to certain shifts and astrological discrepancies, the sun is not in the constellation to which a particular sign refers at any given moment. And this is a familiar idea, and it was repeated at the mentioned at the beginning of the book. And this, I think we can refer here to page, is it page 63 or 61 in this book? When we state, for instance, here it is. When we state, for instance, on page 63, that the sun is in Aries, it conveys an esoteric truth because the constellational energy is reaching us when the sun is in the sign Aries, but not an exoteric fact, because when you align with the vernal equinox, we find the vernal equinox at the first point of spring pointing to a background of stars which is not the constellation Aries at this time. If the background of stars were the constellation Aries, the vernal equinox was pointing in that direction, then we would have an exoteric fact, but we do not. The sun was in Aries at the beginning of this great cycle, but it is not exactly in the exactly the same position today when it is found in that sign. Now, by a great cycle, we may even mean a minor precessional cycle. The sun, in terms of the great, really great cycle we're in at the moment, we're in a cycle of 25,000 years approximately in which Pisces has been the ruling constellation and not Aries. All right, well, I want to get out of these quasi-mathematical things and move on. This, he says, I called attention to your attention in an earlier part of the treatise. All right. Another, and now this is the fifth factor which is involved in the present turmoil, distress, disruption, upheaval that is present on our planet. Another factor little known is that the moon today is disintegrating with increasing rapidity, and this necessarily affects the Earth and produces terrestrial results. The moon has been called by such names as the divine lunatic, and it has a malefic effect on the Earth and its beings. The effect of a decomposing body in space. So the moon will have completely disappeared by the time the seventh round is completed. Now, by that, we don't know whether we're dealing with a chain round, the ordinary rounds connecting with our fourth chain, or whether we are dealing with something larger called a scheme round. Let's see if we can find that. Moon, seventh round, let's see. By the time the seventh round is reached, the evil effect of the then moon, which will have to all intents and purposes practically disappeared, will be finished. During the fifth round, men will discover, however, how to neutralize any remaining effects through scientific achievement and knowledge of the necessary sounds and mantrams, and thus much evil will be offset. The etheric moon is included in these remarks. The greatest effect of moon conditions is to be seen working out in the terror and present distress in the animal kingdom. So it says that the moon is the decay of a moon has an evil effect upon all that contacts it, as a decaying body on Earth has upon its surroundings. It is occultly offensive. This will be more truly apprehended when the etheric double of our moon is studied. As the moon becomes small through the process of disintegration, its effects upon the Earth will be correspondingly lessened. and this stage will be paralleled by a consequent greater freedom from evil impulse of the sons of men. Better conditions among the animals will be the result above all else, and the dying out of that which is noxious in the animal kingdom. I assume this means the poisonous quality of certain animals. By the time the seventh round is reached, the evil effect of the then moon, which will have to all intents and purposes practically disappeared, will be finished. During the fifth round, men will discover how to neutralize it and so forth. There's something here which seems to suggest the seventh chain round and not a much later time of the seventh scheme round, if we even reach that far. Venus will never reach a sixth or seventh scheme round because it has accomplished all it has to in five scheme rounds. So I'm going to highlight this as something of great interest in A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, page 795. Okay. Now, coming back here. So, the effect of the moon upon human lives and upon animal lives is also one of the factors causing distress. And we do share this planet with lives from the moon chain, which had been incompletely developed by the time that the life of that chain was brought to an end by the intervention of the solar logos. The next section is most interesting. Students would find it of interest to make the following applications of these great cyclic events to their own appearance and functioning processes in time and space. The succession of the greater rounds of the zodiac, or the period of approximately 250,000 years, has a correspondence to the life cycle of the monad. So, we have learned here that the 250,000 year cycle is indeed zodiacal. And perhaps each one of these cycles is ruled by a particular sign of the zodiac. And this is, but it may be the zodiac of 10, which is the greater zodiac, will be involved. The progress of the sun as it passes through the signs of the zodiac during one of these 225,000-year cycles finds its analogy in the life cycle of the ego or soul, which is of smaller duration than that of the monad, of course, because the greatest of all the human cycles, of which there is one, is the monadic cycle. Does it literally last 10 times longer than the egoic cycles? This has yet to be determined, and we may be dealing with a symbolic comparison. The lesser zodiac covered from the angle of extreme illusion in the course of 1 year corresponds to the life of the personality. Can it be said then that the duration of a soul cycle is really equivalent to 25,000 personality cycles? Probably not. It's unlikely that a human being would live 25,000 cyclic incarnations thus far. I think the number is smaller than that. Sometimes it's referred to as the 777 incarnations, but that also is a symbolic number. So the monad cycle, symbolically corresponding to 250,000 years. We're told that monads operate in terms of cycles of 1 and 3. and the progress of the sun, the egoic cycle, 25,000 years. And these cycles, I believe, are fours and threes, something of that nature. I'll have to check that out. The personality cycles, four, fours, and sevens. Here, actually, is the quotation from Cosmic Fire. The egoic cycles are not fours and threes, they're sevens and threes. The egoic cycles proceed in groups of sevens and threes, not in groups of fours and sevens, as do the personality cycles, and the same ratios must be predicated of the central cycles of the heavenly man and of a solar logos. Central cycles, does that mean in relation to particular rounds that are central and of chains that are central? The monadic cycles proceed in groups of ones and threes, as do the basic cycles of those entities of which man is the microcosmic reflection. So perhaps even greater beings are involved here particularly. And all of these are actually, it appears, zodiacal cycles. I was questioning that a little earlier. Was the 250,000 year greater round, greatest round as far as we can see, was it a zodiacal cycle? And apparently it is. But how it is that that round will be measured or assigned a sign of the zodiac, that still has to be determined. In considering these points, it should always be remembered that great shifts in consciousness or great expansions of awareness are followed inevitably by upheaval in the outer forms. This is as we're trying to examine the parallel between the number of times the axis of the Earth may have changed its inclination in a dramatic way and the number of initiations that our planetary logos has passed through in the planetary sense, not in the cosmic sense. We are in the process of the fourth initiation in a planetary sense, the lesser cycle of initiations, and that is quite different from the cosmic cycle. So three and a half times already this has occurred, the changing of the Earth's axis. We are probably in the middle of it right now, and it's corresponding with the fourth of a particular type of initiations, a particular series of initiations for our planetary logos, as discussed on page 384 of Cosmic Fire. So it works out microcosmically. It is so for the human being as he experiences these expansions of consciousness, upheaval in the outer forms, and it is so for the planetary logos and probably also for the solar logos. So yes, it says, this is true in the life of the solar deity, of a planetary deity, of humanity as a whole, which is in the process of great upheaval, as it faces its first initiation, and of man. Hence again, today's world problem, which is based upon great changes on the macrocosmic level, as well as the planetary level. A major event such as a change in the axis of the Earth, and this cannot mean, this does have to mean a change of direction and a change of angle. It cannot mean the gradual gyration whereby the pole star is eventually changed. That is another and more gradual cycle. This seems to be a more of a first-ray cycle and rather abrupt, relatively speaking. A major event such as a change in the axis of the Earth is related to an initiation of the planetary logos, indeed. So if it is said to have occurred three and a half times, we're dealing with the fourth at this point, the fourth time. Students can here note, a major event, a change. I'll fill that out completely. Students can here note, therefore, the relation to the individual life as it shifts its consciousness steadily in the vital unfolding processes of the path of discipleship and of initiation. Well, we do achieve different orientations, don't we? Let's just say, the different orientations we achieve are analogous to the change in direction of the Earth's axis. There is a time when we shift from a personal orientation to that of the soul. It is a kind of a reversal of the wheel, and it involves a great deal of upheaval. There's also a time when we change our orientation towards the spirit, or let's say towards the triad and then towards the spirit, and each time involves an upheaval in the form life of the disciple. Earlier in this treatise, I referred to a fact which must always be borne in mind, and that is that the great energies playing upon our planet exert a hindering or a stimulating effect. Just as our planet, our solar logos chooses not to be receiving too much of the first ray energy in this particular time because he is working on the cultivation of his soul nature, and there would be a hindering effect if he did receive too much of this first ray energy. They are either retarding in their effects, retarding of what? Producing concretion, crystallization, and a holding back or onto that which is old and of the past. So this is the reactionary effect. Or they stimulate and produce fluidity, enlargement, and expansion. Well, when we talk about fluidity, enlargement, and expansion, we're talking here about the Gemini, Mercury, Jupiter effect. And the lunar effect is more towards the production of concretion and crystallization. We can say, I suppose, that from Vulcan and Saturn come some of these concretizing and retarding effects. But sometimes retardation can be of value to solidify the process and make it more stable. The careful student of human affairs will note this as he studies the events which are passing today before his eyes. There was a great retrogression occurring, and it's still occurring. People strongly influenced by the sixth ray and perhaps by the inverted first ray, seeking the concretion of the form. I suppose any ray can be used in a retarding manner. But the outgoing sixth ray has a particularly destructive effect, and I'm thinking of the great devotion to the past that has been stimulated in some groups, such as the people of Germany in relation to the Nazi experiment, this reclaiming of the past. It was also true of other Axis powers, and the sixth ray is definitely involved in that. Japan has loads of sixth ray in its personality, and Italy in its soul. And the fourth ray was everywhere present as well, giving us the choice between going ahead and going backwards, a constant conflict between the future and the past. So we have these various influences. I suppose there are influences from a number of the minor planets, which correspond to the third aspect, and which could be considered retarding in their effect. Anyway, these big changes are initiatory changes, the changes in the direction of the Earth's axis, and the change of a human being in terms of his orientation towards different parts of his energy system are also corresponding to an initiatory process. In other words, let's put it like this. When the human being repolarizes his attention, then there will be upheaval. Even the very first reversal of the wheel, a repolarization of attention from the personality to this vague higher power, causes an upheaval. When the person is beginning to build the antikarana and there is a fixing of attention upon the monastic permanent atom, upheaval again. And the same for buddhi, and the same for atma, and the same for the monad. Each time there is an elevation of the polarization, which we can think of as analogous to the redirection of the Earth's axis, there will be a change in the flow of energy, and patterns that were used to a particular flow will now be subjected to a flow which may disrupt them. Speaking with a wide generalization, it might be said that the three major groups of forces affecting our planet are zodiacal, systemic, and planetary in nature. So we understand the zodiacal influences are constellational, the systemic influences are, well, the sun and the other planets, and the planetary influences have to do with the centers within the planet itself, the different kingdoms and different centers, zodiacal, systemic, and planetary. So he's generalizing widely, as we can expect him to do in this particular section of the book where larger issues are undertaken. Number one, zodiacal energies pass through Shambhala and are related to the first ray of will or power and affect the monad. Now, that is particularly in this series of three. There are other places where DK discusses the zodiacal effect upon the soul level and also the zodiacal effect upon the level of form itself, being even a sub-diaphragmatic in its focus, with the seven sources of the seven rays being super-diaphragmatic. So we have seen that zodiacal influences are everywhere prominent. But in this series of three, when we're thinking of zodiac, system, and planet, the monadic correspondence is undertaken by the zodiac. How the zodiacal energies affect the monad, we don't know, but we do know that the top of the head center, and especially the heart of the head center, which corresponds to a zodiac, has a strong monadic correspondence. So if you think about that, that the zodiac of constellations is the heart and the head center of the one about whom naught may be said, and that our own heart and the head center helps us attune to the monad, we can see the connection between the zodiac and the monadic level. That systemic energies pass through the hierarchy and are related to the... what he's given us here is that the zodiac in this series of three has a correspondence to the first ray. The systemic energies are largely planetary, and they will have a correspondence to the second ray of love, wisdom, or as it is often called in esoteric astrology, the ray of attractive coherency. And these systemic energies affect the soul. It's interesting where he puts the name of a ray. It seems to appear out of nowhere, and it's one of the really interesting names for the second ray. And it seems that the planetary influences contribute to the factor of coherency. They affect the soul, not necessarily the triad, although the triad is the true ego. We'd have to look into that. But anyway, the soul on its own plane will be affected. And the systemic energies are, well, they're not limited to the planets. There are other beings there. But they do contribute to the drawing together of energy factors and the holding together of energy factors, which we call coherency. The planetary, aha. I'm going to add something to this. I think we want to talk about systemic energies as being largely solar and related to our solar logos, to our solar logos. And if we consider the planets in this respect, they will be as aspects of our solar logos. So the sun, or the stellar level, seems to be the level at which factors are held together. Sometimes we skip this middle level. We simply talk about the zodiac and the planets. But there is the level of the star between the two, and certainly our solar logos and every other solar logos holds together a system of planets, if he does have a system of planets. So I'll have to rethink that. It's not so much the planets per se, but the planets as part of the solar logos representing his chakras. And the main energy here is the solar logos. Okay. Planetary forces impinge upon and pass through humanity and are related to the third ray of active intelligence and affect the personality. We do have three levels here, in a way. The levels of the houses are corresponding somewhat to the planets, and the signs of the zodiac are corresponding to higher influences, both solar and zodiacal. So I think we see pretty clearly here the way DK has set up this particular triplicity. Now, probably he's getting us ready for the science of triangles. We do have a triangle here, constellation level, solar logos level or sun level, and planetary level. Actually, among the planets, there are those that do promote attractive coherency, such as Venus and such as Jupiter and maybe Neptune to a certain degree, and there are those which contribute, well, Vulcan also can destroy, but contribute to attractive coherency. Saturn tends to put pressure on things and also to crush them and to split them if they cannot withstand that pressure, and Mars is definitely a divisive force. It's interesting to think about what may be the influence of the Earth upon the other planets, and I'm sure it has its perhaps from some other planets, the beings on those planets may look at Earth as a malefic planet in process of becoming a benefic planet. Of course, all the planets are gods and they are benefic in the long run, but to the lesser beings who are identified with form, they may appear to be malefic if they disturb the form. Okay, so three levels, a zodiacal, a stellar, and planetary. And even though there are among the planets those that definitely do correspond to the third aspect, but those sacred planets who correspond to the second, and those among the sacred planets, which are the synthesizing planets, which correspond as a triangle to the first aspect of divinity. So every triplicity is really a ninefold demonstration. We could probably find that to be the case among the types of zodiacal constellations there are and among the types of stars there are, non-sacred stars, sacred stars, and maybe synthesizing stars. Maybe the same for the zodiacal constellations, some with lesser experience being non-sacred, some being sacred corresponding to the seven planets, and others superior. Usually we're talking about the three great constellations when we think about the first aspect, but I think we could find some constellational lords among the zodiac that were so well developed that they could per se be connected with the first aspect of divinity. So then the three that is here demonstrated would emerge actually in practice as a nine. To this I earlier referred, but have restated it as I seek to have it definitely in your minds as we go forward with our new studies. You have a major trinity of energies emerging out of a vast and incomprehensible aggregation of forces and energies which stands to them as the one life stands to the lesser important triangle. So DK has this tremendous sense of all the vast accumulation or aggregation of energies available. And out of this, a major trinity of energies emerges. You have here a major trinity of energies emerging out of a vast and incomprehensible to us, maybe to him too, incomprehensible aggregation of forces and energies which stand to them, to the major trinity, I suppose, as the one life stands to this lesser important triangle. So this incomprehensible aggregation is as the one life to this lesser important triangle. But it is important for us. It's quite local, you know. We cannot look at the whole universe and say that our zodiac amounts to very much. It's just a tiny little circle. And yet to us, this triangle is of great importance and distributes, in this sense, the first, second, and third rays. But of course, you know, just as I've said, the planets can affect, even though they are third aspect in this general assignment, they can affect not only the form, but they certainly can affect the soul, and they can affect the monad as well. The monad itself is just a cell or an aspect of a particular planetary logos. The zodiacal energies, as I've been saying, and as is brought forward in Chapter 10 of A Treatise on White Magic, can affect the form, but also the soul level, as we learned earlier in the book, and in this particular case, its assignment is to the monadic level. And then we know much about the sun. It's a kind of a triple sun. It can stand for the form level of personality. It can stand for the soul, and the sun can also stand for the monad. So we have a three, which is a nine. But there's a one, two, and a three emerging from each one of the major aspects. You have the zodiac. It's representing the first aspect in this configuration, but there's a one, two, and a three proposed. We have the solar aspect, the second ray aspect, but subsidiary to that is a 1, 2, and a 3, and certainly in terms of the planets, it's very evident, the non-sacred planets, the sacred planets, and the synthesizing planets. From this greater third aspect, a 1, 2, and a 3 does emerge. It must also be remembered that this triple group of energies produces differing effects according to the type of mechanism. These are familiar ideas by now. It's the quality of the form which determines what will be the effect, whether promoting or retarding, of these different types of zodiacal, stellar, and planetary influences. The type of mechanism. And the type of mechanism is itself dependent upon the point in evolution and the stage of development upon which it impinges. So I'll just read it straight through. It must be remembered that this triple group of energies produces differing effects according to the type of mechanism, itself dependent upon the point in evolution and the stage of development upon which it impinges. The effect, for instance, of zodiacal and systemic force upon a sacred or a non-sacred planet is widely distinctive. Well, we're raising it up to the macrocosmic level. Just as the effect of these energies as they make their impact upon man will depend upon whether response is evoked from the monad, the ego, or the personality. And basically, he's showing us here that in fact the zodiacal energies do affect the three levels of man. This is confirmation that the zodiacal energies affect the three levels of man and cannot and are not simply focused, as we might think if we did not read carefully, on the monad. And thus it is for the planets, and thus it is for the stars. All three levels can be affected. After all, these are great gods, much greater than the monad. The monad is a god too, but the planetary logoi is a far greater god. Solar is far, far greater, and the zodiacal lords incomparably greater than that little god that is the monad. So the effect, for instance, of zodiacal and systemic force upon a sacred or non-sacred planet is widely distinctive, because the non-sacred planet is not as far evolved and so will not have as, let's say, as positive or as evolutionary a response, though it will have a response. Just as the effect of these energies as they make their impact upon man will depend upon whether response is evoked from monad, the ego, or the personality, and it can be evoked from all three. Whether they impinge, in terms of humanity, upon mass consciousness, the mass consciousness, the self-conscious unit, or the illumined consciousness of humanity, in its more initiate brackets, we might say. Put this down here like that. In its more initiate brackets, because there are all different levels of human beings, the mass conscious human beings, the self-conscious human beings, and those with illumined consciousness, and the zodiacal impingings and the systemic impingings will have a different effect on all of them. So the quality of the form is the main thing, right? The quality, let's repeat that, the quality of the form determines the type of astrological, the type of response, determines, let's call it the quality of response, of response to astrological factors, greater and lesser. Or whether, in fact, as far as man, the microcosm, is concerned, they play upon unevolved man, upon evolved man, or upon disciples and initiates. So we've been given a very good analogy here. We have non-sacred, sacred, and the synthesizing planets, and zodiacal and systemic forces impinge upon them with differing results. We have non-sacred, developing, and sacred human beings en masse, and the response will be different depending. The quality of the response will be different to each zodiacal impinging. And then we come right down to the level of the tiny human being, the unevolved man, the evolved man, and disciples and initiates, and they certainly do respond differently to the zodiacal impact. The type of mechanism and the quality of consciousness determines reception and response, and this is something that he really wants us to get, and he's been driving this fact home for quite a while and repeating it here as he's preparing to get into the science of triangles. The type of mechanism and the quality of the consciousness determines the reception and response. This is a statement of basic importance, and it is much ignored in modern day astrology. It's as if all Aries people or Taurus people will react as every other in their particular category, and it's just not true. This is a statement of basic importance, and until astrologers can arrive at the point of development where the world of true meaning is open to them, that is the world of the soul, world of significance, that would be wrong. World of the soul, and where the scope of their consciousness is widely inclusive, which is the way astrologers must soon be educated, it will not be possible for them to be truly accurate in their interpretation of group or individual horoscopes, because they just don't know what are the potentials of the form and what is the status of the particular form upon which these energies are impinging. And beside that, of course, as DK has labored to show us in the foregoing pages, there is no true accuracy at this time. Well, maybe we can say there is no exacting accuracy at this time. There is a relative type of accuracy. I'm bringing this point up as the whole science of triangles relates entirely to subjective energies as they condition the consciousness, and not to the conditioning brought about by the same energies upon the outer forms, upon the physical plane. So this is very important. Science of triangles has to do with the conditioning of consciousness and not with the conditioning of outer form. A very important point. Unless one reads with great care, one can gloss over much. DK did say that because this book deals strictly with energies, it is his most occult book. And if you think about that, A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, which is meant to be, well, not read only by initiates, but really understood only by true initiates, what does that mean about the book Esoteric Astrology, which is his most occult book? So very, very careful, and in this case, rather slow reading, as perhaps I've expanded some of these things in this new section a little bit beyond tolerance, trying to get into new areas of understanding. So repeating, I am bringing this point up as the whole science of triangles relates entirely to subjective energies as they condition the consciousness. This whole astrology of the soul is about changes of consciousness. And consciousness is such a subtle thing. You can be looking sensorially at the same particular object as another person with greater consciousness, and what is realized and understood will be very different to the more limited consciousness when compared with the more expansive, deep, and advanced consciousness. Okay. You may here rightly remark that as a man thinketh, so is he. Well, that's a bit what I was talking about. We look at the same sensory input, but how do we view, what do we really perceive according to the sensitivity of our consciousness? And then how will we think about what we perceive according to the level of our consciousness? You may here rightly remark that as a man thinketh, so is he, and that this expression of energy will amount to the same thing in the last analysis. But this is not exactly true. Thinking, of course, the quality of a man's thought depends upon his consciousness. Let's see what he's going to say here. The response of humanity or of the individual man to the inner thought life and to the subjective consciousness is not immediate. It takes a while to make its percolative impact. You know, sometimes it's not just a hit. It trickles down, it percolates down until finally it's realized. It takes much time, especially in the early stages, for an idea to work through into the mind and from thence to the brain, conditioning the emotional nature in its progress and processes. So already there may be impacts upon us, which are the import of which, well, the presence of which are not realized. Already there may be impact upon us, the presence of which are not yet realized. Several lives may therefore be given to the registering of the effects of these energies upon the thought life and the response of the physical plane life once they are comprehended. So the subjective energies are not immediately registered in the thought process. I think that's what's being said here. Subjective energies are not immediately registered in the thought process. It is for this reason that I've stated that the science of the triangles underlies the whole system of astrology and is only now in process of revelation. I think certain of these important triangles have been influencing us, but only now are being registered. Certain important triangles have been influencing humanity, but only now is the human mechanism ready to register that which has been impacting. Let's go back a little bit here. The science of triangles relates entirely to subjective energies as they condition the consciousness, and not to the conditioning brought about by the same energies upon the outer forms. Well, there's going to be a delay in the conditioning of consciousness, and hence a delay in the energies, the application of these energies to the outer forms. But we're first interested in their application to consciousness, which is not a process with immediate results, but gradually takes form over a number of lives. Several lives may therefore be given to the registering of the effects of these energies upon the thought life and the response of the physical plane life once they are comprehended. It is for this reason that I've stated that the science of triangles underlies the whole system of astrology. Well, you know, and is only now in process of revelation. The human energy system is really essentially threefold. And the way in which the Trinity of Man is affected by the energies which are organized above in Trinitarian form is the great subject. There's always going to be a balance or an imbalance in the way there are impacts upon our Trinitarian nature, a spirit, soul, and body. And this Trinitarian nature is pervasive throughout cosmos. We are always going to find the triangles and the main three types of energy having to do with what DK emphasized as life, quality, and appearance. Actually, the word life is even greater than that of the first aspect. Sometimes I think we should say will, quality, and appearance. Because life, in many ways, is like the point at the center of a threefold triangle. It's as if we have Atma, Buddhi, Manas, but the monad in the center of that particular triangle. Bear in mind that the effects of these energies, which we shall be considering, and of their triple relationship, always, will be in the realm of ideas and in the world of consciousness and its expansion. So we will be, their registration, be in the world of the spiritual triad and in the world of the soul. But there is consciousness, of course, in the personality. But the world of ideas is found within the cosmic ethers, which is the world of the spiritual triad, and will embrace, therefore, the sentient thought life of a solar logos, of a planetary logos, of humanity, and of man. So, in general, we are looking for subjective effects when studying the triangles, and thus, the effect of these triangles on the higher aspects of the nature of the individual and of the human race. And then, of course, inevitably, these changes in the higher aspects of the individual man and humanity will result in a change of consciousness, which will result also in a change of action and a change of form. But he has really lifted us onto a higher plane here. We are obviously not dealing with exoteric astrology whatsoever, which is so form-centered. We are dealing with what we sense, what we know, what our sentiency reveals, what our sensitivity reveals. We're dealing with our perception of the inner worlds and our realization of the nature of the larger system in which we are a whole. And the science of triangles will be promoting the expansion of that realization. Yes, of course, there will be inevitably impacts upon the form, but we are not focused there. The science of triangles is a more subjective science, and it has to do really with the triangle hovering above the square. The triangle represents the inner life and the consciousness, and the square represents the form and how that the changes in the inner consciousness will work out in changes in the form. So first we go to the triangle, which represents the soul or consciousness aspect, and then we go to the form, which is representing the outer, more material nature of the man. So it will not therefore deal with the producing of events, except insofar that all ideas work out into expression on the plane of manifestation. Such working out being, again I repeat, dependent upon the quality and nature of the apparatus of response, be it a solar system, a planet, the fourth kingdom of nature, or a human being. In a way, we're going to be studying the threefold soul, we're going to be studying the threefold spiritual triad, we're going to be studying the threefold monad. It's a nine all together, and how these all work out within the square. If you think about it, we've got a 13 there. That's man. If you add together the 9 and the 4 of the manifested creative hierarchies, we have the 13. That's the human being's creative hierarchy. It's four down from the logoic level, and it's 9 down from the highest of the hierarchies. I think you know what I mean by now when I say this. If we look at this, highest of the hierarchies, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 down, and then we go to the next, and we find we have to add to that 5, 1, 2, 3, 4, and come to man, so that's a 9. 5 above and 4 within this area of manifested creative hierarchies, and then the number is 4, of course, 1, 2, 3, 4, the fourth creative hierarchy, the number 13 is involved here. Three triplicities and a quadrant. And I wonder if we can find a 14 by looking at the very essence of the monad. The number 14 is so important, you want to know how to derive it. Well, if you consider the monad a singularity, you can't derive it. It's just one quadrature or one quadruplicity, which is the personality. The triple soul and the triple triad, so that's 6 and 4 is 10, yes. And then you have the monad as a singularity. So that is not, we cannot find the 14 there. You see, one way we can find the 12 is, however, 1, 2, 3, that's 9 and 4 is 13, and 1 is 14. Yes, that's the way to find the 14 when we consider the monad a triplicity. But if we consider the monad to be a single point, then we have the triple triad, we have the triple soul, and we have, in a way, the triple personality. And with the monad, we'll have a 10. Or if we count the 4 of the personality, we'll have an 11. If we think of the monad without its center, we'll have a triangle for the monad, triangle for the triad, triangle for the soul, and also a triangle for the personality, which is also a legitimate way. And there you will have a 12. But if we add the fourfold nature of the personality and the threefold nature of the monad plus its inner point, we'll have a 14. Anyway, all of this is trying to figure out the relation between the 10, the 12, and the 14. The 10, a first-rate number, the 12 having to do with the Devic evolution, and the 14 also being an important number when considering the double seven of the Great Bear and the Little Bear. Well, that was a tangent for sure. We'll end this part, the end of Esoteric Astrology Adventure number 113A, page 413. Coming up on page 414. So page 413, and we will seek if we can to continue. Beginning of Esoteric Astrology Adventure 113B, page 413. All right. That should do it for the moment. These are vast subjects, of course. And, you know, I almost apologize for the way my particular human mind has to approach them. I'll approach them as best I can, realizing that it's just speculatively outlining possibilities. All of this, the triangle hovering above the square, is the important factor.